It's time for JT the Brick.
I'm rolling today. Vegas is the sports and entertainment capital of the world. No debate. Every day we have the ability to talk Raiders, and you can talk about whatever you want to talk about this time of year. There's never an off season in the Raider Nation. I've done this rodeo before. Do we all agree?
Here we go again.
Hey, girls.
JT the Brick.
We want to put guests and callers on the radio who can make an impact. We're going to talk sports, all different types of sports, because we do a sports talk show. We have the best fans in all sports calling this show for over a quarter century. We hope that remains the same whenever you want to pick up the phone. Enjoy everything we do, and please always feel welcome to call in and to tweet and to be a part of the show. It's Big Boy Radio. Are you with me? What do you got? You, the Raider Nation, have an opinion. Use the phone like a weapon.
And now,
this is completely BS.
Here's JT the Brick.
JT back on Raider Nation Radio, the flagship of the Silver and Black. Vinny Bonsignore joins us in studio. And Vinny, great to see you here. You're double dipping today, which is always a good thing.
I am. I will be sitting in for Q Myers, who is off on a well-deserved vacation.
Yes.
So for the next 6 days, I think, before I take my vacation, I will be sitting in for Q on Unnecessary Roughness from 2 to 5 p.m.
Well deserved for Q to be off and for you to jump in. Fantastic. Let's start off with Willie Mays, because I'm spending most of my day talking about it. When I got the news last night, I think we both reflected on our dads. My dad grew up a Yankee fan, but he said the greatest player he ever saw was Willie Mays, and that meant a lot because my dad sat there in the bleachers for DiMaggio and Mantle, who were two of the greats of all time. When you heard the news, what was your reaction?
Yeah, I thought of my dad first. That was his guy. He was a New York Giant fan. But you know, we're so lucky, JT, to do what we do and sometimes brush with greatness. And back in 2010, I was a reporter in Los Angeles, and I'm in spring training, Dodgers and Angels, spring training in Arizona. And the Angels were playing the Giants at their facility in Scottsdale, beautiful facility. If you've never been there, it's a great place to go during spring training. And I have to go into the Giants clubhouse before the game. I'm doing a story on one of their players who grew up in the area that my paper covered. Mm-hmm. And so the player was like, hey, you know, look, can you give me about a half hour? I got to go do some weightlifting. Yeah, whatever. Take your time. So I'm just in the Giants clubhouse before a meaningless spring training game. And who walks in but Willie Mays?
Unbelievable.
And my jaw is off the ground at this point. And I'm like kind of like looking around, and I caught eyes with a player for the Giants. He's like, yeah, that's Willie Mays. It's pretty cool, isn't it? And I was like, he was impressed. I'm definitely impressed. Well, long story short, Willie eventually commandeers a table in the middle of the clubhouse and just starts telling stories. And within 5-10 minutes, pretty much the entire Giants team is hovering around this table listening to Willie Mays tell these stories. And this is 2010, so he was 79, you know, but sharp, just sharp as a nail. And he's telling the story, and one that stuck out to me was he was telling the story about this famous old pitcher, Early Wynn, all right, who is a crusty, hard throwing. If you were to do anything off of him, chances are the next time he came up, you were going to get one in the ribs, or maybe even worse, right? So it's an all-star game. And Willie's like, we're talking about an all-star game here. My first at bat, Early Wynn's up there, hit a home run. I'm running around the bases, and all I can hear him is barking at me the whole time I'm going around, calling me every name in the book as I'm going around the bases in an all-star game. He goes, I can't even enjoy it, the moment, because in the back of my head, I know, man, the next time I get up, he's going to put me on my butt. Like, that's what, and I, you know, in the dugout, I get to the dugout, and the players are like, what? I'm worried about what's going to happen next. The heck with the home run. And so, you know, the players for the Giants are like, in an all-star game, you go, didn't matter if it was an all-star game, regular season game. You don't do that to early win. He's gonna get you back. And it was a little pause, and he's like, fortunately for me, they took him out before my next at-bat. So I didn't have to deal with that. But they were hanging on every word, as was I. And I just walked out of that clubhouse. Like, I was thinking about my dad the whole time. But walking out of there on clouds, it was just an amazing, amazing experience.
Yeah, Willie Mays, 24 All-Star games. Yeah. 24. And I know Pete Rose well, and I know how much the National League wanted to win that game. They treated it like it was a World Series on steroids. That was it. And for Willie Mays, from 51 to be Rookie of the Year, to lose two seasons, almost two full seasons for his service, then to come back and win the MVP in the World Series. You think about that today. Imagine an athlete today for those who are younger listening to come in and win the Rookie of the Year, say the NBA, then you have to go serve your country in a war environment in this country, and then you come back and win the MVP. I don't think young people, and it's not a knock on them, I don't think they understood what those athletes in the 50s and 60s and even the 70s around the draft had to deal with. I mean, Bill Walton, who you and I talked about, he was peacefully protesting at UCLA as he was on one of the greatest streaks in the history of college basketball.
Yeah, and you know, not just athletes, but it just spoke to the time of the sacrifice that everyone, our fathers, our grandfathers, our uncles, you know, sometimes had to make. And not to get, you know, overly political or anything like that, but, you know, I was reminded of that during the pandemic. And I know we all had to make hard decisions and hard, and things got, you know, a little hairy there. And we all kind of had to just chip in for the good of everything. And people not quite understanding that and just thinking individually and just about themselves and making it kind of a selfish type of a thing. When I was like, do you realize what sacrifices have been made for us to just to be here right now? Like, well beyond having to wear a mask or, you know, maybe having to keep the, I know it wasn't great. And I know it was frustrating and all those things, but compare that to the real sacrifices.
Ted Williams and a bomber.
Right. You twice.
Know, yeah, I mean, Ted Williams.
Right.
And to see the amount of years that they missed. I know Mike Trout's been hurt a bunch, but it's not like being taken away from your craft.
Right.
And I think that's a big part, as Joe
Louis
out.
Had to go do that.
Right.
You know, and he fought for just to rally, you know, morale, or, you know, went on a barnstorming tour. Didn't get paid a dime for that. And gave up years of his career for it. So yeah, I mean, just those sacrifices, and let's not even talk about guys that went and never came back.
Yeah, of course.
You know, that could have been in the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. Vinny Bonsignore in studio. He's coming up next, hosting for Q. So let's dive into the Raiders. As I told you before we sat here, I want to say never, and I'm been known to exaggerate, but for this year, there's two things that are hitting me as we're sitting here at the end of June 19th, and happy holiday for everyone observing here. I look at the Raiders, and there's no drama. No drama. It's not like last year you and I were sitting here, Jimmy Garoppolo, injury, Tyree Wilson, injury.
Would they be cleared?
And Josh McDaniels potentially probably not going to get fired, probably going to figure it out, but Josh McDaniels, who is going to put together a hell of a game plan, at least win or lose. And that was a little bit of a light chirp I heard from the Raider
For
Nation.
Sure.
Now it's completely desolate, quiet, because the team loves each other. The coaches get along with everyone. Knock on wood with the health of the team. And it just seems like no one's given the Raiders any attention because the mass media is saying they don't have a quarterback. They're so disrespectful. They're using that term. They don't have a quarterback. They have two quarterbacks.
Right.
And I think both of them are talented. They're just not elite.
Right. And I'm with you. When I see that, don't have a quarterback. They don't have an elite quarterback, but they have two quarterbacks that I think can be serviceable. That doesn't mean, JT, that the Raiders won't be back in the quarterback business in the offseason, trying to improve of that. We talked before the show about how, think about it, the Baltimore Ravens moved on from a Super Bowl winning quarterback in Trent Dilfer. The very next year,
they
moved on from him. So the Raiders can win 10 games. They could go to the playoffs. But if they're not getting super elite quarterback play in the process, there's a good chance that they're probably going to redo it. Now, I'll say this, though. I think if these quarterbacks play suitable football, given everything that's around them, there's no reason why they can't win 9 or 10 games and maybe even get into the playoffs. You know, the quarterback situation will you know, get sorted out in the years ahead, perhaps as early as next offseason. But to suggest that they don't have a quarterback, I think is a mistake. They, you know, they may not have the high level quarterback, but they've got two guys that both of them showed that they are capable quarterbacks. Aiden in his rookie year over the last 9 games, and certainly Gardner Minshew almost got his team to help get his team to the playoffs with the Colts last year.
If we go back to last year and Jimmy Garoppolo would have been healthy the entire year, this is a tough question. Do you think he would have played the entire year, or you think he would have got benched at some point? What just a guess out loud there, because it's a really big point on how I'm going to back this up. Aiden got into play because Jimmy was injured, and then Jimmy wasn't playing well enough to come back and take his job. Aiden played well down the stretch, didn't he?
He did. He played, you know, there were some.
Yeah, there was some.
Of course, he's a rookie. But yeah, no doubt he played better than Jimmy was playing. Here's what I'll say about Jimmy. In retrospect, the Raiders, when he failed that physical right before signing the contract, they probably should have just moved on at that point, right? But man, you're kind of behind on a rock and a hard place, and you're just counting on him, you know, being ready to go when the bell rings. I think we underestimated the effect that injury really had, and the surgery that really had. Because I'll say this, he never looked right. When I say right, he never looked like he was moving around freely and comfortably. Mm. He was on a pitch count during training camp. He had to have off days during training camp to deal with this. And as he told me later on, he never used this as an excuse. I'll always respect Jimmy Garoppolo for this. In retrospect, he's like, man, it was just never really, and then it was never really right. And I think his play reflected that. So to answer your question, it would have been interesting to see what a fully healthy Jimmy Garoppolo is. He's not the greatest quarterback in the world, but he has shown beyond a shadow of a doubt that he can help you get to a Super Bowl. He can help you get to multiple championship games with the right ingredients around him. And I think that he did have a lot of the right ingredients. The question will always be the coaching and not necessarily the X's and O's, but the aura that was in that locker room and around that team under Josh McDaniels. And you bring up a good point. I don't think anyone was thinking that he was going to get fired. But I do think he's got to get it turned around this year based on what had happened the first year.
It was loud. It was loud from the fans. The fans, and rightfully so, and we've debated this, the fans never wanted him, and they wanted him out sooner than later. And once Jimmy went down and Brian Hoyer and then Aiden with no experience comes in, you know, Raiders could have been able to win some games there, but with the infusion of Antonio Pierce from the interim head coach position, it got the team to play, I think, with more juice. And that's the momentum, Vinny, they bring into this year. They're playing with a tremendous amount of juice. You bring in Joe Philbin, Marvin Lewis again, former head coaches. They're going to button everything up. But with the install of the offense, and you're out there for mandatory minicamp, you're only going to see so much, and they're not going to do a full install at this point in time. Those players aren't even going to make the practice squad or getting reps. It's really important that they get to speed with this 12 personnel fast without any practice coming up here. I think it's veterans July 23rd. So from July 23rd on the field all the way through that first preseason game in Minnesota, what do you think the priority needs to be?
I think the priority needs to be, and they actually did install their entire offense, which is crazy.
Yep.
And we were talking about this. It was literally install this segment of the offense in the classroom, go out there and practice it on the field or rep it on the field. But there was no time for mastering anything or redo anything, because the very next day it was, now it's this part of the offense. And so they got the full book, and that was a challenge in and of itself. I think what you're going to see in training camp is them kind of figuring out, all right, what do you keep? What don't you keep? What are they good at? What are they proficient at? And start streamlining things so that you can get to a point week one where you've got enough mastered to be able to go out there and compete at a high level. And here's the question is, whether you're at first base in this offense or second base at this offense or third base of this offense, doesn't matter. You got to figure out a way to come up with a game plan with the plays that you know and the part of the playbook to whatever extent you're into it to be able to go out there and play football and good football and winning football. And I think by the time they get to that first game, they'll have achieved that. And the other part of it is, what we didn't see during OTAs, and you just can't because there's no pads and it's not conducive to it, but a run game that I think is going to be almost a cornerstone part of this offense, something that the Raiders want to hang their hat on, being the more physical team, being a stronger team, running it down your throat. You didn't see that in OTAs. It's not that kind of a party. Once the pads come on and once that gets introduced and once they get into the preseason and the regular season, that's a component that they're going to be able to add to what we saw to OTAs. And I think it's going to make a huge difference, because if the Raiders can run the ball to the level of the opposing defense has to respect that, it's really going to open things up now for the passing game. And when you talk about the weapons that they have, and if the quarterbacks can just be accurate and on time, then they should be okay offensively to go out there and compete. And go with that defense. It's just a great defense.
Wrapping it up with Benny Bonsignor. So finally, we look at the calendar. You came on. We talked about it last week. Now the calendar for me, I see guys. I was in the building yesterday. There's guys there. You can come in, and guys are going to be working out. Aiden's going to be throwing in the park. But I think this is an important time to get a break for the football players. Get back to your families. Go wherever you're going to go. And then hit the ground running. I don't know what the level of intensity is going to be in Costa Mesa. I don't think it needs to be at a 10, and it better not be at a 6, right? You're going to have to dial it in there that there's going to have to be really hard days. And I think the best ways to have a good practice are those dual practices. What are you sensing is going to happen on the days they're in pads, the days they have an opponent at practice, and the level of intensity to get ready for back-to-back hardball games on the road in L.A. and Baltimore?
Yeah, unless things have changed, they don't have anything planned yet for any dual practices. So not quite sure why that is. Mm-hmm. It's just maybe a schedule. They play the NFC West, so the Cardinals and the Rams are, you know, could be off the off the list. But I'll say this. I do think it's going to be an extremely physical camp. I think that Antonio Pierce is going to raise the level of the physicality during training camp, because I think that's what the Raiders want to be and want to be about and have to be about, especially on that offensive side of the football at the point of attack when you're talking about guys like, you know, Thayer Munford and Dylan Parham and Andre James and Jackson Powers Johnson, who I think Raider Nation is going to fall in love with, and Colton Miller, and just being physical at the point of attack and being tougher than you. I think that's really what Antonio Pierce wants to build. And the way you do that is by letting them get after it in training camp. I'm not saying that there's going to be tackling to the ground or any extracurricular activity, but I think there's going to be a premium put on physicality in this training camp, because to your point, you start the season against Jim Harbaugh coach team and John Harbaugh coach team, that's what they're going to hang their hat on.
They're going to hang their hat on that. Great point. We both go to La Casa Cigars. Tell us about that and what you're going to be doing here, because you got a vacation coming up and you're grinding through it. I'm doing that in early July. So La Casa and your other partners, tell us about it.
Yeah, La Casa and our great friend Mike Pareto, a huge Raider fan. It's a great place and a great lounge. So you just go chill and have some fun. And what he's done, what Mike's done, is pair up with our good friend Les Quecahuna over at Dos Catas Tequila, and they've paired up some of the great specialty cigars with the labels of Dos Catas Tequila. So it's created this great partnership of great tequila with great cigars. So it's always 7 days a week, and they've got music. It's a great vibe. You know that. So go check out La Casa, and also check out some Dos Catas Tequila in the process.
I'm sure you're going to be talking about Willie Mays coming up.
Yes, absolutely. No question about it. He deserves this moment. Now the question becomes, because he was the greatest living former MLB player, the greatest living baseball player, who takes that?
You nailed it. I mean, I tweeted it out last night. I want to be appropriate about it. I don't think you can argue the three players here who are all, you know, obviously past, but when you look at the life of Willie Mays, Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron's life and what he was able to do, those are the three immovable Mount Rushmore guys. I don't care. We both have young sons. We both have families. I don't care if it's 100 years from now. Maybe Ohtani.
Right.
Judge is not in the conversation yet. Trout with his injuries.
Yeah.
I always thought Bryce Harper had the ability to be kind of a cross between Pete Rose and Mickey Mantle.
Right.
You look at all the great players from the generation. The immovable players you cannot move are Henry Aaron, Willie Mays, and Ruth, in any order you want. I threw that up on Twitter, and a lot of people said the fourth is Jackie Robinson. Hmm. And I would have said Lou Gehrig's a better player than Jackie Robinson, period. I think Jackie Robinson had a bigger impact, breaking the color barrier.
For sure.
And then, as Bobby knows, it's Ted Williams.
Joe DiMaggio?
Joe DiMaggio. So why, last thing, and we'll go here in about a minute, and when we look at historic baseball, why are we always looking so far back? And I think it's because Bonds abused the power of performance-enhancing drugs, and you can't put Bonds on that list, but he should have been that guy.
Which is unfortunate, because you're right. He should have been that guy. He was headed in that direction. Ken Griffey Jr., I guess, you know, the injuries, you know, played a little bit of a role. For me right now, I know he was a pitcher, but Sandy Koufax has to be the guy that, you know, you kind of look at.
No doubt.
Right.
Got to have a pitcher on that list.
Yeah. But in terms of the positional players, we've just basically lost the last of that great.
Gone.
Yeah. Era. And unfortunately, some of the players that followed him, did some things that they shouldn't have done. And it's not my fault. Mm. you did it.
Yeah.
And you're forcing me and everyone else to take that into account. I don't know what you would have done had you not done what you did. And so that's a tough
Ohtani
one.
Ohtani doesn't sniff this list unless he pitches.
Right.
He's got to pitch.
For sure.
He's not overwhelming with his bat. He's very good.
Yes.
But look at Judge and other numbers. So if Ohtani pitches at that level for 10 years and hits at that level for 10 years, I think he's got an outside chance.
Yeah, and you know, he's just such a great story and such a great talent. But again, it's going to come down to longevity and him actually, you know, from this point forward, just doing what he's doing and putting up those years. Mike Trout is a great example. I just feel bad for him because he doesn't have the playoff success. I mean, it's just he's been let down by the organization.
Nice long interview with Vinny Bonsignor. Have a good show coming up.
Thank you, JT.
Vinny Bonsignor brought to you by La Casa Cigars. You want to get through before the end of the show. 702-365-9200 on a day that we're paying tribute to the Say Hey Kid, Willie Mays.
Two, Wagoner deliver. Mays hits it into left field. There goes number 3,000. Willie Mays gets his 3,000th base hit.
Welcome back as we continue here on Raider Nation Radio, flagship of the Silver and Black. On a day where we're trying to spend most of the day paying tribute to the legendary outfielder Willie Mays, the Say Hey Kid who passed away yesterday at the age of 93 years old. And man, I've had a lot to say on this. My phone's been blowing up since the second I got the news. You know, I'm from New York, and my dad's generation and my dad's favorite, but my dad always said the greatest baseball player he ever saw live. And I wanted to spend a day paying tribute to him. As I tweeted out last night when we found the news, it's been a rough couple of weeks here. Just a matter of weeks from Jim Otto passing away, Bill Walton, Jerry West, and now the Say Hey Kid in Willie Mays. And I was watching the Yankee game last night, and Judge got hit on the hand with a pitch, and there was a lot happening. And I'm watching the game, and it was on TBS, and Bob Costas was on the call. And I like Bob Costas a lot. He reminds me of old-school baseball. He's a baseball historian. And I love the fact when Bob Costas is doing a baseball game. I think he was doing it with Jeff Francoeur. And at the time that I was watching, and I first found out where it was because baseball games are everywhere nowadays, Kevin Costner was in the booth, and Kevin Costner was talking about his movie career and the great movies, and Bob Costas was asking him questions, and I thought it was really entertaining, and the Yankees are playing the Orioles, and then this whole dramatics with Judge getting hit and hurt, but Bob Costas made the announcement, and I didn't have my phone on me, which we should all have our phone less when we're watching a sporting event, but normally when I'm watching sports, my phone is close by, and Bob Costas broke the news on the broadcast that Willie Mays passed away. And it was pretty heavy to hear from Bob Costas. I'm actually happy I heard the news from Bob Costas, and I saw John Miller. And as you know, John Miller handled it so eloquently, as we've talked about earlier, beautifully as the voice of the Giants. But a couple of things to say about this again, if you're joining us late. We're leading off with this at the top of every hour and going to talk about it all the time here. Just for a two-hour show, when a legend passes away, I always say they deserve more than 20 minutes or two segments. And we've had some people chiming in on this, talking about it via Twitter and YouTube and all that. To be the greatest of all time, hands down, is hard to do in sports. It really is. There's always going to be a debate. But for most of his life, Willie Mays has been considered the greatest baseball player of all time. I fall into the camp of Babe Ruth. That has to do with the Yankees, and he and Babe Ruth are the only two players that have similar stats, even bigger stats than Henry Aaron. Willie Mays' stats that put him over the top, I believe, over Babe Ruth as a stolen bases. His stolen bases are a big part of that, too. He was the best five-tool player of all time. He could hit. He could hit for average. He could hit for power. He could run. And he could field. So those five tools made him, I think, the greatest player of all time. And I have no problem with that. But this is the guy that you debate about this coming up in 51 as the rookie of the year, which is pretty impressive. Then 2 years of service for his country. And 2 years for service, he didn't come back to 1954. And that's when the Giants won the World Series. So think about that. A rookie year, a rookie of the year, then 2 years of service, basically missing close to 2 years of baseball, then come back and win a World Series and go out there and win the MVP award. Pretty incredible when you think about that. That is very rare when you look at the GOAT and the history and everything that he was able to do. So for Willie Mays, he's on the short list. I think you have to consider him, and many do, the greatest baseball player of all time. But you can't take him out of the top two or three of the Mount Rushmore. If you have Babe Ruth or Lou Gehrig or Joe DiMaggio, or if you go with Pete Rose as the all-time hit king, whatever you do, I think on any list that can never be changed in our lifetime, and it really divides the people of the modern day to back in the day, is that you have to have Babe Ruth, Willie Mays, and out of all due respect for the Say Hey Kid, I put Willie Mays number one, Babe Ruth number two, and then you start looking at the rest of baseball, and you go from there. Ted Williams is the greatest hitter of all time. But my number three or number two is Henry Aaron. So Ruth is an old, old, old timer. You want to add Ty Cobb? You can. But Babe Ruth and Willie Mays, and then you go to Henry Aaron, and Willie Mays and Henry Aaron coming through the Negro League as the Thursday night game in the oldest ballpark in America, in a Negro League ballpark where they are paying tribute to Willie Mays, but now he's passed away. Born May 6, 1931, Willie Mays, born in Westfield, Alabama. He played under a tremendous cloud of racism early on in his career and played for the Birmingham Black Barons and was one of the greatest Negro League players to ever play in 1948. If you look at the statistics of playing, they even sent him to AAA for a short period of time. And he went to the AAA for a short period of time, and he should have went right to Major League Baseball, but that's what they did back then. Short period of time. He was an all-around, all-American athlete. And he was playing with the Negro League team until the Giants signed him upon his graduation from high school in 1950. The Rookie of the Year award in 51, 20 home runs to help the Giants win their first pennant in 14 years. 54, MVP award, leading the Giants to their last World Series title before they move west. The over-the-shoulder catch in game one of the 54 World Series is easily, still to this day, the most famous baseball player of all time because of the significance and what he ended up doing. That play was in the World Series. Jim Edmonds had a catch just as good, if not better, a diving backwards catch, but it wasn't a World Series performance like that. Mays went on to win another MVP award in 1965, also led the Giants to the 62 World Series. They lost to the Yankees in that World Series, and then ended up his return to New York after a midseason trade to the Mets back in 1972 and retiring after the team's trip to the 73 World Series, which is a big deal considering that the Mets were a World Series team at the time and everything he was able to do. Just what an incredible life. His stats, he's better than his stats, and his stats were crazy. A career lifetime average of 301. That's 3,293 hits, 660 home runs, and he batted in 1,909. And the accomplishments, the big one is the 24 All-Star games. And look, he had All-Star appearances near the end of his career, and they brought him up there for that reason. He's the NL leader in home runs four times and in slugging percentage five times, while batting over 300, posting 100 runs batted in 10 times each. And he was also one of the fastest players to ever play the game when it came to his stats. Stolen bases four times, led the league in triples three times, runs twice, 179 steals during the decade, topping the major leagues. He was the first National League player to hit 30 home runs and steal 30 bases in a season. Remember that 30-for-30, 30-30 rule. Now it goes to 40-40. The first player in history to reach both 300 home runs and 300 stolen bases. That's a big deal. First player ever, 300 home runs, 300 stolen bases. Second player and the first right-handed hitter to hit 600 home runs. So the awards are just fantastic here. I can go on and, you know, read this and continue looking at Wikipedia and all that, but I think y'all get it. World Series champ in 1954, a two-time NL MVP, 24-time All-Star, 12 Golden Glove Awards, the Roberto Clemente Award, led the league in home runs and stolen bases four times. You know, he hit four home runs in one game, April 30th, 1961. His number is retired by the Giants and the Mets. San Francisco Giants Wall of Fame, the All-Century team in Major League Baseball's all-time team, inducted into Major League Baseball's Hall of Fame in 1979. How he wasn't unanimous. I mean, think about that. He wasn't unanimous. 94.7% of the ballot. And then everything that he was able to do throughout his life as a Giants ambassador. I've been at several, you know, I lived up in the Bay Area. I was at a few games where Willie Mays was at the game and they recognized him along the way. And I don't have an interview with him. It's something I regret. And I just look back at his life and say, I'm lucky I was alive as a young boy. And some of the memories I have, which aren't many because I was a Yankee fan, but I remember him coming to the Mets and how big of a deal that was with all my friends who are Met fans. And I got a lot of texts from my buddies last night as we were on the text thread talking about Willie Mays, the Say Hey Kid. For my dad, you know, I keep talking about my dad here a lot, who just turned 86 years old. And Willie Mays just passed away here in his 90s, which is a beautiful life, right? When you can live that long and you think about having a long life like that, but it hurts. You know, the Say Hey Kid, one of the greats of all time, regarded as one of the greatest players of all time. He ranked by Sporting News during his retirement the second best player behind Babe Ruth. And I don't have a problem with anybody saying he was better than Babe Ruth. The impact that he had on the Negro Leagues and to come to the Major Leagues and dominate, to have an African-American player come from the Negro Leagues. Now we're using the Negro League stats, which is very important. Josh Gibson, considering one of the greatest of all time. You could now and always could put him on the Mount Rushmore, but he didn't get a chance to play the way Willie Mays did and have a long career in Major League Baseball. Babe Ruth, Willie Mays, Henry Aaron. I don't care who you are, where you are, where you're listening. You Mount Rushmore, you can't move those three. I don't care if we're talking baseball in the year 2064. You can think about Derek Jeter. You can think about Bryce Harper, Aaron Judge, Barry Bonds. Whoever you want, you can think about it. But the Say Hey Kid, Willie Mays, will never be removed as one of the top players of all time. Arguably number one, but if not number one in the conversation for 1-1A or 2. May he rest in peace, and it's going to be very interesting to see what Major League Baseball does coming up Thursday night. That'll be a big celebration for him. And then I'm sure the Giants with the number and everything that's going to happen this year with the World Series and the tributes. Can you imagine the All-Star game this year? A 24-time All-Star, what they're going to do for Willie Mays. And I'm sure Rob Manfred is going to get this right. I'm positive the Commissioner of Baseball will get this right and look back at Willie Mays' career in the coming days and coming weeks and pay tribute to the Say Hey Kid, one of the greatest of all time, a member of the U.S. Army. Soon after his Rookie of the Year season ended in 1951, he learned that the United States Army had drafted him to serve in the Korean War. Before he left to join the Army, Mays played the first few weeks of the 52 season with the Giants, but then was gone and came back in 1954. He spent much of his playing time in Virginia, much of the time playing on a military baseball team with other major leaguers. But when you look at the fact that he had close to two seasons pulled away from him and you saw 660 home runs, you got to be kidding me. For every little boy who ever picked up a glove and a bat or a ball, Willie Mays will never be forgotten. We continue to pay tribute to the Say Hey Kid as I continue on the flagship of the Silver and Black. Anything you want to say on Willie Mays, I'd greatly appreciate it. We've been doing this a bunch here over the next couple of weeks, and I think we're doing it the correct way. 702-365-9200. Brought to you by PT's Golden Entertainment. They own the Strat, Arizona Charlie's, the Laughlin Entertainment Center, and about 70 taverns here in town. If you're looking for a place to raise a glass for Willie Mays, PT's fuels the monologue every show, and I wanted to bring them up again for their proud partnership on the flagship of the Raiders.
Pitch to Mays, and it's rolled back. from the crowd and in the dugout from the net as he belted a 3-2 pitch over the left field wall.
Say hey. Really nice job today by Bobby. That's Willie Mays' 647 home run with the Mets ending at 660. He's a productive player, the greatest player of all time. We debated that all. And before we wrap it up, a little bit of a soundbite from John Miller momentarily last night, which you got to hear that coming up. So I thought we did a hell of a job today. Our callers, our listeners, those on YouTube, those on social media, appreciate it. Not many days as a sports talk host you're going to come in with a bigger name passing than Willie Mays. And with us, a lot of our connection is to the Bay Area, the West Coast. A lot of people participated. Thanks again. Let's get out to Raider Rat, who joins us in Vegas on 920. Go ahead.
Yeah, JT, I lived in the Bay Area almost all my life. Saw many games at the stick. In my opinion, number one, best player. Number two, I saw the highlight on the Vic Wirtz catch, and they interviewed him after that game, and he said the most important thing on that catch was to get the ball back into the infield so nobody scored on the play. A lot of people will just talk about the catch only. Number three, I heard on a source last night, they said that he only hit into 45 double plays in his career. If that is true, that's amazing. And the last thing, in my opinion, the top three outfielders I got to see play in person were Mays, Aaron, and Roberto Clemente.
Yeah, those are three great ones. Thanks for the call, Rat. Appreciate it. Really good. Obviously emotional today on the news of the passing of Willie Mays. 702-365-9200. As we take a look back on everything that's happening here. And, you know, he was introduced in the 1999 All-Star Game, which was pretty interesting here, too. Remember, now, this is something I want you to hear first, and then we'll go back and talk about this because this is an important moment for me and my father and a memory that comes back strong with me.
He played in 24 All-Star games, won 11 Gold Gloves for his electrifying play in center field. His 660 home runs are third all-time. Say hey, Willie Mays!
All right, so I was there. I was there with my dad. I was at that game with my dad doing a radio remote at the time for Sports Fan Radio Network. That was one of the greatest memories of my life with my father. Ted Williams showed up on a golf cart. That was Sosa versus McGuire. It was incredible. Pedro pitched in that game. July 13th, 1999. And I still go back to the fact that Vin Scully called that and he never met Willie Mays. How do you not meet Willie Mays and he's there? Didn't meet him until 2016. Which was interesting. And then the introduction of him at the 2007 All-Star Game, this was in San Francisco. This is a little bit longer. This is Willie Mays, 2007, the All-Star Game, his appearance in San Francisco.
Ted Williams once said, the All-Star Game was invented for Willie Mays. The Say Hey Kid played in a record 24 Midsummer Classics, and here tonight, among a constellation of the greatest stars in today's game, he shines again. Please welcome, from center field, the Say Hey Kid, number 24, Willie Mays. And now with a throw one more time from center field, here is Willie Mays. A man with the most hits in the history of the All-Star Game, most stolen bases, most runs scored, a career 307 hitter, in Midsummer Classics, and a man who, when he was an All-Star, wanted to play a full nine innings. 1960, went 6-for-8, hit for the cycle in the All-Star game. His favorite All-Star outfield he was a part of, himself, Roberto Clemente, and Hank Aaron. So charismatic, played with such joy. People just loved to watch him play.
Joe Buck on the call. He went 6-for-8 at an All-Star game. 6-for-8. Are you kidding me? This is absolutely incredible. And then Bobby and I decided to play this as we're wrapping up our Willie Mays tribute show. This is a little bit longer than the sound bites we usually play, but it's from the great John Miller, who has one of the most important and impactful voices in all of baseball as the voice of the San Francisco Giants. And this is his thoughts on the passing and the life of Willie Mays.
A baseball legend. An American icon. Willie Mays, the Say Hey Kid, was a true giant of his time. Born in Westfield, Alabama, in 1931, Mays began displaying his athletic prowess at an early age. Before he even graduated high school, he was playing center field for the Birmingham Black Barons of the Negro Leagues. In 1951, Mays emerged as a rising star for the then New York Giants. He won Rookie of the Year honors just 4 years after baseball's color barrier had been broken. For the next 23 seasons, his achievements would cement his title as one of the greatest players to ever play the game. In New York, he dazzled crowds at the Polo Grounds and led the team to a World Series championship. His charisma and joyfulness were infectious. He was often seen playing stickball with kids in the neighborhood. When the Giants moved west in 1958, he brought his exciting brand of baseball to a new audience in San Francisco. Making impossible catches, speeding around the bases, launching home runs, Willie's showmanship and style were undeniable.
Here's the pitch to Willie.
Swung on, hit deep to left. That one is way back, way back, way back. Well, it's goodbye, number 600 for Willie Mays and the bye-bye baby bonanza.
He was one of the greatest home run hitters of all time, with an incredible 660 career homers, even though he missed nearly two full seasons serving in the Army during the Korean War. He played in 24 All-Star games, tied for the most in National League history. He won 12 Gold Gloves and two Most Valuable Player awards. But his accomplishments off the field were also impactful. He remained a presence in the Giants clubhouse after his playing days, mentoring hundreds of young players. Forever a kid at heart, he also committed himself to supporting underserved youth throughout the rest of his life. Willie's impact echoes throughout the baseball community, from the tree-lined promenade of Willie Mays Plaza to the halls of Cooperstown. And in 2015, he received the Presidential Medal of Freedom to honor his remarkable contributions to our country and its national pastime. As baseball endures, so do Willie's values of consistency, dedication, and courage. With an indelible mark on our hearts, he leaves us with a lasting reminder to work hard and find joy in this great game and this extraordinary life. Say hey, Willie Mays. The best there ever was.
All right. I hope everybody appreciated that. So we wanted to do that today, and Vinny's coming up next. He's in for Q for a while, and we're going to talk about the Raiders when we get back here tomorrow. I just thought, for me, Willie Mays had a big impact on my life as a sports fan, a baseball fan. And the last couple of weeks, and I think we've tried to look back at the lives of Jerry West, Bill Walton, Jim Otto, and now Willie Mays. And I'm hoping that there's not a show like this coming up anytime soon again. There's a lot of old-timers out there. You know, I just went to Mike Ditka's event in Chicago. He wasn't able to travel and come up to that. You look at these legends in your life and you say, man, how much longer are we going to have with them? I think Willie Mays, for me, is a celebration of life because he lived until 93, and that's pretty cool. And I think he got the most out of his life, and a lot of fans really appreciated him. So the rest of the week, we're going to have a couple of other guests come on here. We'll talk about the Raiders. And all we're doing is setting the table for Costa Mesa and what we're going to be doing on the road. And that's kind of a work in progress. Q's going to be on vacation a little bit. Vinny will go on a vacation. I'll go on a vacation. And then we'll hit the ground running in Costa Mesa and cool off a little bit. Cool. It was beautiful yesterday, Bobby. I don't know what happened yesterday. It cooled off significantly. And maybe it'll jump up again, and it'll be a good weekend coming up here. Want to thank all of our proud partners, especially the DiCastaverde Law Group, Alex and Orlando DiCastaverde, a law group based on the dedication and legacy of their father, who came from Cuba, La Familia. The brothers have your back, brotherswin.com. If you get into an accident and are injured, call the DiCastaverde Law Group, 702-222-9999. Vinny is in studio. He's got a big show coming up next. I got a podcast with Tom Looney coming up later on today. It'll be airing tonight. JT and Looney, wherever you download your podcast. And thanks for helping us support our YouTube channel, JT the Brick YT on YouTube, as we'll have a special sponsor and announcement coming up on that. Have a great rest of the day and keep it here to the flagship of the Raiders. Vinny's up next.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.